podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's got to 2-2 and we've still got more than half an hour to go, and here's Ozil. Lacazette, Ozil!
Yo!
Could have had that fight, but I'm in walk on sight. Man, I had to grab that mic. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with a good energy. Not gonna work with a bad man vibe. None of these guys could do that.
It's Aaron Ramsey.
My shine. That's foul. Man,
that's the response of Arsenal.
Man crossed the line. Score for my team in the time I play. Boy, better know when man's
Chelsea
inside.
Man, can't say I get simply the floor, but you can ask lost their focus in the joy of equalizing.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Touchy Gooners podcast. It's your boy Dan Coogs. I'm hosting duty today. I've got Doc Lee and Shabs. How you guys doing?
All good, man.
All good.
Before we get started, just some minor housekeeping. Make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube. If you're watching this live on the YouTube, make sure you drop a like on the video as well. Leave a comment, leave us a question, actually, if you're watching this live. We'll try our best to get through to them. Make sure you subscribe to their Patreon as well. The details are going along the bottom of the screen right there. So we've got a lot of Patreon content planned before the start of the season. Shabs, you had a lot of ideas about what we can do for some patrons, the idea man himself. So we definitely got some more content coming out, and I think from this episode onwards we're probably going to be dropping ad-free episodes on the Patreon there. So if you don't like listening to them ads, make sure you subscribe to the Patreon and you can skip all of them over. Nathan, early comment here, you were waiting for us, you were commenting before we even went live. You're at Lewis already. Yeah, Lewis is busy today, so we'll save that one for another time.
Lewis isn't even here. Nathan, don't tell me you went and dug up receipts. He said he checked the tapes. Come on, Nathan, man.
He gave the minute marker and he gave the episode number as well. So on, we'll Nathan, have to tell Lewis that one.
We'll let him come back to you, Nathan. But I love the dedication.
Yeah, we'll let him come back to you, and you might expect a response in 10 to 12 working days. Yeah, so we'll go like that.
I can say the reason Shannon's not here is because he owes me money, and I'll be running him down. We made a bet in the chat, and ever since we made a bet, he don't turn up.
He was coming.
All right, okay, cool. Because he knows I'm going to ask him where my peas at.
Yeah.
So let's get into it, right? So we had the friendly today against Watford, another Premier League team that we played in pre-season. I think we got another two. We got Tottenham and Chelsea coming up. 4-1 win. Did you guys have a chance to watch any of the game or see the highlights or anything like that?
Can't lie, I was getting cooked at work today. It's a myth.
No worries. So I'll give my thoughts initially on the game. I think first half, the lineup was a bit fugazi. You know, Tavares started. Pablo Mari centre back with Callum Chambers, and then Cedric at right back. We had Lokonga and Elneny starting centre mid. Then we had Willian in the hole. And then Aubameyang up top with Reece Nelson on the right and then Ketty on the left. And I was seeing that lineup and I was sort of thinking in two minds whether or not I'm even going to watch it. But I think there are a couple noteworthy performances from the first half and from the second half that we can come on to. So, Shabs, I'll start with you, because I thought Eddie Nketiah in that first half, he put in a bit of a showing, to be honest. I think he was showing some aspects of his game that we've not really seen from him, where we've actually been quite critical of him in terms of his work outside the box. But I thought off the left today, he was coming in, linking play quite well, and he scored a wonderful goal with picking up the ball out wide on the left, beating a defender coming in on the inside, and then slapping it in the bottom corner. So What do you make of that? And, you know, that does that change your minds about what you might want to do with Nketiah for the rest of the season?
No, I think it was a fantastic goal. But let's put it into context, man. It's a pre-season friendly against Watford, who I didn't see the full game, by the way. I saw highlights, but I heard the narrative about Watford just looking really poor, actually. So he's done it. He scored a really good goal. I saw the finish. I think it was a good take. I probably didn't expect him to get it in the back of the net. Not him. It was one of them ones where when he scored, I was like, oh, what a goal. And I was like, who is that? Oh, swear down, you done that. So I was a bit, you know, I was a bit like, okay. But nah, bigger picture, it doesn't kind of change it for me in terms of what we should do for him or with him. I want him to do well. Like, I really do. I think he's got a good career in him. I really like him as a footballer. I'm just not sure that he's well suited to us, what we are right now, or what we're trying to be, what we need to be in the future either. So, yeah, but I think he can go on and have a good career elsewhere. I want him to score so that he drums up the interest and drums up his price and let him have a happy career.
Yeah, fair play. Because I want to be devil's advocate a bit, right? So if it was Balogun playing off the left and done that goal, do you know what I mean? I feel like a lot of the fan reaction would be quite different, you know, because at the end of the day, that is now Premier League opposition, you know. I don't know. I generally couldn't tell you who played for them today, to be fair. So I don't know if that was their strongest team, strongest 11. That was, you know, people who were playing in the youth, etc. But as far as I'm concerned, that was a nice goal against Premier League opposition. So I think, Shabs, you and me have been quite balanced on the whole Balogun thing, you know, and whether or not we think he can perform at Premier League level, can be relied upon to perform consistently on a Premier League level. Because I know people have cited this he's under 23 form and how he's looked in Europa League, but I think Nketiah has performed at both of those levels as well to a decent to good standard. So I'm definitely one in the let's wait and see what happens with either of them, because I do believe in Balogun's talent, but I want to slow down a little bit in, you know, sort of how people praise him. So nice one from Nketiah. So Doc Lee, I know you didn't get to watch the game, but this was Lokonga's second appearance in pre-season. I, for one, thought he was quite impressive in the first game. The question marks were, you know, the level of opposition he was playing, the pace, the intensity, could he step up? And again, today, I say, against Premier League opposition, he looks like a Rolls Royce of a midfielder, to be honest. He was receiving the ball all over the park, spraying it first time off both feet. So do you think that this is someone that we can kind of chuck into the deep end and see if he sinks or swims?
No, I don't think that's wise. I think you have to still be cautious with the development of these young players. He's 21. He's just come from the Belgian league. If you chuck him in, not only is that probably a bit negligent from an Arsenal perspective, and it's a bit negligent from looking after Lokonga. So if he's a Rolls Royce, he'll come through. It'll be banging on the door and he'll come into the team. So we'll have to just see how it goes. But in the meantime, I still think we should cautiously drip feed him into games, drip feed him into the league, drip feed him into the team. And we still give him minutes, don't get me wrong, and it's up to him to show if he can maintain that level and find the level quickly. But yeah, as for throwing in the deep end, no, I would still be signing another person to have ahead of him.
Mm. Yeah, because the thing is, to me, it's like, you know, Elneny is the one who has been trusted with a lot of minutes last season. And when they've been playing in these games, Lokonga looks way better. To me, like Elneny at fault for the goal today. And my thing is, I don't want to sort of say that this guy's not ready yet, when I think we've seen a couple young Gs, you know, just do it immediately. I think Guendouzi probably was a lot better than what people thought he was going to be. I don't know whether we can say he sort of smashed out the park immediately, but he didn't look out of place, I think, when he was playing centre mid under Emery. And also Martinelli as well, I think, has acclimatized himself to men's football very quickly. And he started on fire, you know, when he was playing in the Europa League and those League Cup matches. And he scored two in his first three starts in the Premier League as well. So I feel like sometimes these young players, if they're good enough, they will shine. So maybe we don't necessarily start with Lokonga as first choice, but if he's good enough, he might be playing a lot of minutes towards the end of the season. So definitely one to watch, I think. Probably a more contentious topic we're coming up to now with the striker situation, I guess, because we've got Aubameyang, who started today, and I've named the lineup. You've got Nelson on the right, you've got Willian in the hole, you've got Nketiah on the left. So already that doesn't seem like the most creative of attacks behind Aubameyang, but this guy looked terrible today. And I think he's not looked good in the last couple of games in preseason either. So we've asked this question a lot on this podcast, you know, like, are people worried about him? I've always maintained that I'm not worried about him. We just need to give him chances, this, that, and the other. But it's getting harder and harder to maintain that position. So, Shabs, I'll go back to you again. So what do you think is the situation here? And do you think Alba might be finished?
I've held my line on this for a really long time. But, yeah, my line is starting to waver, because I'm looking at him and I'm looking at him playing and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a lack of hunger, if it's a lack of kind of motivation, of desire. I don't know if he's, you know, he's really made it now in terms of, like, you know, he secured that big bag and, you know, we see a lot of flamboyance from him off the pitch. And do you know what? I'm not one to don't pocket watch. It's not for me to say kind of what he should do or shouldn't do with his money, how he should live his life. He's earned that. Do you see what I'm saying? But it's like the enthusiasm for some of the activities off field, vis-a-vis how he comes across, how I'm reading him coming across when he's on the pitch. I'm just starting to question, like, you know, does this guy seriously want to be here? As an Arsenal captain, because fair enough, like goals, you know, goals are, you know, the biggest commodity in the game. Like, you know, we know what he's done, like, in the past, but, you know, you can't rest on your laurels. Like, you can't trade off past glories. Like, you have to, it's about currency. And for me, this goes beyond preseason. This ain't just about these preseason games. Last season, I think he was awful. And, you know, you can caveat that with how poor the team played, how poorly the team played, especially prior to December. You know, not being able to create chances, etc., etc. But I think even when there was an improvement on that front at the turn of the year, he still didn't really look himself to me. And I kind of thought, all right, what is it? There's just little things that are starting to make me question his application. That's what I'm seeing now. So I don't know. I don't really know where we go from here with Oba. I think there's no excuses for him not to kind of do more this season in terms of his all-round performances. You know, he has to play up front. He has to play close to goal. You said something earlier, Dan, about previous managers not relying on him to be involved in the build-up. I think that's a fantastic point. I don't think he actually needs to. I think why is there such a big emphasis on him being involved in build-up? He doesn't actually need to be involved in build-up. We just need to get the things around him and create the chances so that he can get into the positions that he's used to. You can sniff out the goals like we're used to him doing and finish for us. But yeah, something needs to give, man. Something needs to give, because you can't have Lacazette outscoring you and outperforming you, really. And you're our captain and our main man and, you know, our highest paid player and all of that stuff. That I can't really get behind that.
If you love listening to us here on Touchline Frackers, what's stopping you from grabbing a mic and starting your own show? And there's no place better to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or, if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to a community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all the other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to us talk about our favourite team, then make your voice heard in Hustle. Acceptance into the programme is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. That's bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/join.
Yeah, I hear that. And I think, you know, last season, there were some mitigating factors around his form. You know, the random freak illness that happened to his mother. You know, he just, people did cite the contract and that affecting his motivation. And then later in the season, he caught malaria. So, Leroy, do you think that any of these things can be, you know, sort of lingering effects? So medically from the malaria, like, is that something that will take him, you know, months to get over? Or, you know, should he really be back to full fitness now? And then additionally, you know, on the mental side of things, do you think that the contract and maybe the captaincy are a big weight on his shoulders as well?
I don't think the malaria should be an issue. I mean, it's always a possibility after any type of illness like that, you can get some long-term malaise and stuff. But the vast majority of people, especially like professional athletes, should be better by now. So I'm really not feeling that's the reason. And this is the first time I've been a little bit worried about Aubameyang, because I ain't been worried at all. Don't get me wrong. Even when I look at us in pre-season, I still don't think we've sorted the chance creation problem, and particularly the type of chances that Aubameyang thrives off. I still don't think we are that type of team to really suit him and cater to him and facilitate him in the best way. But even then, Aubameyang should be getting into more goal-scoring situations than he is. And even then, he should be more... His conversion rate should be better as well. So it is a little bit worrying. I do think that the motivation of obviously a big contract is going to be a factor, because he's not playing to get a big move like he probably would have been. And he's not paying for any big money because he's already got it and the security of it. Because I don't see massive physical declines in him. I still don't see physical decline in him. So I'm not sure what it is. But I really, really hope he sorts it out. And I really hope this is just a temporary slump, because if we need Aubameyang to be firing it, if we're going to do anything this season at all, it's an absolute necessity. So fingers crossed. But I, for the first time, I have small little doubts in the back of my head, is can he still be the guy for us?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we've actually been very patient with him. You know, I think, you know, as a shout out German
DJ,
you know, like we have been very patient with him. I think as a collective on the Touchy Gooners group chat, I think it's been a couple descending voices, but on the whole, I think we've backed him a lot. And we don't really back a lot of players, to be fair, over in recent years. So, you know, I think he does need to sort of repay some of that faith that's been shown in him by some of these fans, and also by the manager who's given him that big contract. So I am slightly critical of Arteta, because I think you should play to your best player's strengths at times, especially when you don't have, you know, a blank checkbook like someone that, like his compatriot at Man City, you know, like Pep Guardiola. So, you know, you can sort of say that players that don't fit into my style of play, I can get rid of them without cost. Do you know what I mean? Or I can go and find someone who fits it quite quickly. Arsenal don't have that luxury. So if you have someone like Aubameyang, you need to play to his strengths. You know, I think getting him and trying to make him into something he's not at age 31 seems insane to me. You know, trying to get him involved in build up, develop some back to goal game, get him to, you know, sort of start fisting up centre backs and whatnot. I don't think that's wise use of resources, especially after you've given him the fattest contract. You're asking him to chase wing backs down the left. You know, so it's a strange thing. So, Real One, I'll let you come in on this topic, yeah, because you're hello, probably lad. One of big up, Real One.
Well, go on, Ak.
How are you doing, guys?
Yeah, all good, man.
You seem too happy, bro.
This is Real One's meat and drink, man. He gets to let loose, innit? You know, so I mentioned there were a couple descending voices in the TG chat. Real One's probably the chief amongst them. That's calling Aubameyang a bum. So Real One, I'll let you speak on this. Like, let the listeners know and the viewers know why you're worried about Aubameyang and whether you think he's got it to come back.
I don't think he's got it to come back. But it wouldn't surprise me if he did. I've never really liked his game, to be fair. He's not my type of striker. Even the stuff he does do well. I think he takes a lot of chances to score. I think we're not really a high chance creating team. Maybe under Wenger, a striker like him would have been fine. But as we're seeing, like this new type of football that we're trying to play, I don't think he suits it. What was the question? That does he have it in him to come back? He's getting outperformed by Lacazette right now. So, I mean, I think that says it all, isn't it? Mm. And how old is he? 32?
Yeah, I think he's turning 32. He's a techie one.
You see, one thing for me is that a part of this as well is it's not all on Oba. For me, this is where I really look at the coach and say, this is a top-class finisher. Like, as far as the tools that
he's a top-class finisher.
Nah, he is. I think his track record demonstrates that he is.
He's a top-class goal scorer.
Don't kill me on my choice word. Okay, sorry. I mean is goal scorer. So these are the tools that Arteta's had at his disposal. So you have to find a way, yeah, as head coach, manager, whatever, you have to find a way to get the best out of what you've got currently. Yeah. If there's a different plan currently, or there was in the past, or there is a future plan to go in a different direction, that's cool. That's one thing. But right now, Arteta has failed in the time frame that he's been there to get the best out of what he has available in Oba. And you can see that in terms of like Oba's underperformance, his XG, you know, like any type of statistical measures that you want to go to or consider over the past season, definitely you can see it. So it's where I can't put it all entirely on him. I think some of the decisions made, some of the management decisions as far as the stance that the club have taken have been crazy. But you actually need to do everything you can to get the best out of Oba. So if he's not performing, if he's underperforming, my questions are why? What else is going on? What are you not doing as a coach, Arteta, enabling him to turn up and put in these performances week in, week out? Is that about your application? Is that about your ability or inability to manage him or get in his mind and fire him up? Is that about your tactical setup? Is that about who you surround him with? Is that about how you, what is that about? There's so many different things where I'm saying, yeah, come on. Like, you know, it's on the culture as well. I don't just want to hang the player out to dry.
Can I interject here?
Of course.
Do we all think that if we get the best out of Oba, that makes us a significantly better team? Like, is Oba the type of guy that's going to fire us to top four?
If Oba's banging, we win a hell of a lot more matches. Hell of a lot more.
So we've seen two seasons now, one where Oba was banging and one where he wasn't, and we still finished in the same position.
I'm up on the position. It's the points.
How much points did we finish last season and the season and the season before.
I think last season, I think 6 points would have got us where? Top four? No?
It was 59 and 61 points. We got 61 points last year and then 59 the year before.
59 the year before. How far were we in last season? How far were we off of the top four in terms of points? Forget the actual position.
Yeah, it was six points off. Yeah. But then I think, Ruwan, what I would say is in the last two seasons, no one scored goals, right? So, like, the season before, Aubameyang was the only one who was scoring, right? So we scored like 60 something goals, and when Oba was actually firing, Lacazette had a good season goal scoring wise. We had players like Mkhitaryan, Ramsey, Ozil chipping in with, you know, sort of like six goals each. We were a point off top four, 70 plus goals, 70 points. I think we ended up on in that 18-19 season, I think it was, with under Emery, where we came fifth. So I think not only is Aubameyang scoring important, it's just the number of goals that we get as a team is important as well. So, like, if Aubameyang had been firing last season, that would have been, say, what, he got 10 in the league. Say he got, you know, an extra 10 or 11. That's 60 goals. And then we need another 10 goals from other players in the team as well. Because we had no goals from midfield. Our centre-backs didn't really chip in with many either from set pieces. So it's very difficult, I think, to make top four when the team itself is scoring that little goals. But we've got a much better chance if Aubameyang is fit and firing for me. Because I think... Let me move on slightly just to bring in some of the transfer talk that we've been linked to, you know. So someone is saying, you know, could Tammy Abraham come in and outscore Aubameyang, right? I'm not really going to go into that question, but...
Nah, that's a valid question. No, guys, wait, one second.
That's disrespect. That's disrespect.
It's disrespectful if it's old Uber. But, brother, we just saw him drop 10 Premier League goals, yeah? And I think Tammy got 11 and he was a bench player.
He got six in the league last year.
He got six and he's at Chelsea.
That's mad.
Over at Chelsea, claps off. Semi-automatic.
Ridiculous. I don't think he does.
Yeah, I think my thing is with the whole Tammy thing. So this is, I don't want to get into Tammy versus Aubameyang. Let's not do that.
I think it's disrespectful to discuss that.
I don't want to do that, man. But what I do want to do is just talk about what you guys think we should do then in that sort of strike department, right? Because all of this talk is about us trying to get, you know, 17 million euro for Lacazette, Atletico Madrid, potentially moving for him. And then if he goes, us looking to replace him with another striker. So Tammy is the one that's had the main links, the big links from the sort of the main UK journos. I was seeing today Vlahovic getting linked to Spurs for £40 million. There was also talk of Isak earlier in the window during the Euros, but obviously he signed a new contract, so he's probably going to be way too expensive to get him out this summer. So what would you guys do in that strike department if Lacazette is sold? I'll start with you, Leroy.
So if Lacazette is sold, I would like to get someone in who I know he's experienced, who I know is going to get goals, and who's not going to block the paths of some of the young players who I feel like at least deserve opportunity for minutes and opportunity to develop. Also, I wouldn't sign someone like an Isak, for example, because I feel like, one, he's going to be mad peas, and two, I have belief at least in some of the young players that we have. So unless they show me they don't have it when they get minutes, then I wouldn't sign someone of that age. So I would sign someone like Ings. I'm bang on Ings. Oh, okay. I think Ings is a proven goal scorer in the Prem. He's an underrated in terms of his footballing ability, in terms of what he can do on the ball, back to goal, skills, link up with the team. And I thought that Ings comes in and gets 15 goals for us, no problem. No problem whatsoever. So I feel like someone like Ings is not going to be expensive. Last year, his contract, I think that's a no-brainer in terms of business. And that's what I would do in the striker department. You've got Aubameyang, you've got Ings as your insurance in case Aubameyang really is dusted and really is out here. And then you give your Balogun and Mars any minutes.
Mm. But do you think, so say Aubameyang is completely finished, yeah? Like, what do we do then if we've just got Balogun and Martinelli?
But we've got Ings, though. That's what I'm saying.
And Ings as well. Yeah, fair.
And that's insurance. Ings is insurance. You know when you like buy a car, you get gap insurance. That's Ings, bro. Gap insurance.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with that assessment as well. How long a contract would you give him?
He's 28 now, isn't it?
Mm. I think he turned 29 like 2 days ago.
Even then, I'm calm giving him 3 years.
Are you sure he's going to accept a 3 year contract though?
Yeah, 3 years because he wants to go to a big club because Ings rates himself. He wants to test himself. He thinks he got hard done by at Liverpool and wants to go to a big club. So if we're the only big club that comes in for him, the only other one I see going in for him is if Tottenham sell Kane and they go, you can be the starter at Spurs. But outside that, if we're the only big club in for him, I think he's taking it because he backs himself.
I think there's been some loose links to Man City as well, if they can't get Kane over the line. I think that might be something that he'd look at as well. But Shabs, same question to you. So what would you do in the strike department if we sell Lacazette?
If we sell Lacazette?
Mm.
It's the same thing for me. It's about a stopgap. If we are going for a younger striker, it needs to be someone who I think is a bit more established or has got a bit of a proven record in Europe, but otherwise that is, i.e. like the Ishak, Rafa Leal, that type of striker. I like that type of striker. You know, big, physically imposing, can compete, can run the channels, can lead the line, decent with the ball into feet. Can be involved in build up since he's such a big thing, but yeah, if we're going with a younger striker, that would be the type of profile that I'd be looking at. But I would try to mitigate the risk as much as possible, and by that I mean looking at strikers who have, like the two strikers that I've named, for example, they have played minutes and minutes and minutes at international level, at varying parts of European competition and in their domestic leagues as well. So they're used to men's football. There might be an adaptation process in terms of adjusting to the pace of the Premier League, but they look like they have the physicality and the athleticism to be able to deal with it and cope with it. So I'll try to mitigate the risk as much as possible by going for that profile. But otherwise, I think we stick with what we've got in terms of the young boys, and we look to go down that Ings route. You know, if not Ings himself, then another striker who's adept, familiar with the Premier League, and has got a bit of a proven track record or semi-track record in the Prem as well, who can get enough goals, but then you'd have to rely on goals by committee. But that's what I'd do, man. You can't mess about. And one thing about Arsenal, however meaty we've been, yeah, we've always had top quality strikers, almost always had a top quality striker, you know, however far back you want to go to, you know, Alan Smith, Ian Wright, like, you know, the Bergkamps, the Anelkas, the Omris, the Van Persie, like we've always had a top quality striker. We need to continue that trend. We need to have like a certified bagsman up front. Mm. Like, it's just like I wouldn't be able to identify with this club if we didn't have a bagsman. It will be difficult for me to, because it's what I know, you know. So
yeah, fair play. Real one, same question to you.
I agree with what they've both said. I'm a bit more open to get a younger striker in. Somebody that's 24, 25 plus, Somebody like, how old's Gabby Jesus?
He's 24, I think. Yeah.
So I think
he's younger.
Is he younger?
I think so. I think he's 20, 23.
I think he's about to approach.
Oh, okay.
He's 24, in April.
Yeah, so I think he's about to explode. He's just about to approach his peak. With the younger strikers, I definitely think that they should be given time. But I don't think they're going to be ready to around the 23 age mark anyway. So what's that? How's Balogun now? 18, 19? So that's another 4 years we've got to wait. That's a long time. That's a long time to wait before you've got a striker that's going to come through like that. So I'll definitely get somebody that's a bit more than a stopgap. I don't think you can call a four-year striker a stopgap. So somebody like the Florentina striker, I don't know how to pronounce his name, call him V-Dub. and Gabby
Vlahovic.
Yeah, him, V Dub fam. You get him, or Gabby, I'd be open to that, but yeah, or Rafael Leao, I like him as well. So, those two kind of long rangey strikers that can run channels, can hold up the ball, can get involved in play, that can beat men 1v1. I'm all for them type of strikers. Even if they've got a lower goal rate than we would like, I'm still all for them. But I definitely think we also need to improve the amount of chances we're creating the team anyway.
Yeah, I think you all made really good cases for what you do. I think if I was to give a preference, it would definitely be in that sort of that Vlahovic camp. Just for the sort of the long-term planning, and just because I personally, I'm not sure what level Balogun's going to be at. To me, I think it's still up in the air. I know people are, you know, very, very convinced about what he can do at Prem level, but until I see it, I really can't say. And to future-proof us, I would like to get someone I know or I think is more likely to clap goals at this level and can potentially do it for a long time rather than a short stopgap. I think if the club, because they're the ones that watch him every single day in training, if they think that Balogun and Martinelli can actually clap goals at this level, then I would do what Leroy suggested and get Ings in just to take a little bit of pressure off them whilst they can get acclimatized. And then, you know, in year two or year three of that contract that we've given him, then, you know, we can let them loose. And similarly with the Vlahovic or the Gabriel Jesus thing, that when, you know, 3-4 years have come up, you can potentially get a resale for them as well. If they have clapped goals, then someone will want them. And if they haven't, then, you know, it'll probably be time for them to move on anyway. So I definitely think that those sort of guys for that price range around 40 million, it makes a lot of sense, because when they're 26, 27, 28, that can be a lot more money. And the way that price inflation is going, European Super Leagues and all this stuff, you never know, you could get a mad deal there that can let you reinvest in the rest of your squad. So let me move on.
I just wanted to say, on Vlahovic, I really like Vlahovic. I think what he's done in the season gone definitely is very, very promising. It looks like he's got a cultured left foot. He looks like he can be a bags man. I'm a bit cautious about him, and I was saying this earlier. I'm a bit cautious about strikers who clap in the Italian league, because, you know, and I was given the example, look at Ciro Immobile, you know. He went Dortmund. It didn't really, really happen for him, but he's there, older, at Lazio, and just, like, scoring goals like water off a duck's back, do you know what I mean? Patrick Cutrone, you know. Young, hasn't really travelled well. Moise Keane wasn't prolific, but, you know, he come onto the scene at Juve and, you know, was everyone was talking about him like the next best thing, and, you know, what's he doing now?
Piatek guy as well.
Piatek, exactly.
I'm so upset that he flopped, because that celebration was too cold.
Listen, Piatek was wavy. Piatek had me invested, but you see, again, he's another example. So these guys bag, like Higuain at 30, I don't know, 33 years old, whatever. He's scoring 30 plus league goals for.
With a 38 inch waist as well. That BBW.
Exactly. It's a bit like you have to like it's mad to score 30 league goals, you know, in any of the top five leagues in Europe, you know. But these men are hitting high numbers in Italy. So that would be my slight reservation about Vlahovic right now. That, you know, it might be a bit of a false dawn. It might be early. Even Morata, who is meaty, you know.
He's not meaty, he's just a pussy. That's the...
Morata, for me, he's meaty. He's got, like, a lot of good about his all-round game, but up front, forget about it, like, in terms of bagging goals. But even at Juve, you know, young revival, like, it was all right for him, so...
Hey, German, man, be quiet, bro, because we're at Bundesliga tax still reigns heavy, bro. That's still at least 50%.
One thing I want to add is just the expectation that we're trying to put on the Balogun's and the Martinelli's, a little bit less on Martinelli. I proper don't think people understand how rare it is, yeah, for somebody that age to come and light up the Premier League, fam. Like, yeah. Really and truly, how many strikers that age have come and lit up the Premier League? We've had, what, Rooney, Anelka,
Fowler, I would say.
Yeah, Fowler, Rashford to a lesser degree. But even if we use Rashford as an example, he bagged his first season. I think the next season, I think he must have got maybe 10 goals, sub 10 goals. And then it's been around that kind of mark progressively.
Yeah.
We can't expect these young players to come and be bagging 10 to 15 goals. Like, I think it's proper unrealistic. If he bags 5, 6, 7 goals, he's had a good season.
Well, all comps?
Yeah, all comps.
Well, you know Martinelli bagged
10. Not even all comps. We're not in the next comps. What comps?
I know. Even in the comps. You know Martinelli bagged 10, like, in his first season?
Yeah, but that's when he was in Europa League as well.
Yeah, but still, all comps. He bagged 10.
And that was a good return. I don't think Balogun scoring 10 goals is realistic next season.
Nah, it's not. We haven't got enough competition to him. But what we need to see is he good enough to come into the first team and contribute? That's what we need to see. I can't believe he wasn't used to the back end of our season. But if he can come and he can hack the level, we should keep him. Because I'm telling you now, sometimes when you drop down as a player, especially as a striker, when you drop down and you're playing in a team that's not as good as the team that you're in, you're playing in a tough league like the Championship, shit can go bad for you. It can go bad quickly. And then all of a sudden...
I'm not even saying loan him. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying that we should try our best to take as much pressure off these players.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But even as fans, I'm saying our expectation, if he leaves next season with like 6 goals... 5 goals, they reach me out. He's got 5 goals, he's not the guy. Do you get what I'm saying? He's getting dashed to the side.
It's not even about the numbers for me. I want to see, can you ball at the senior level well? Yeah. Do you look good? Do you look like you fit? Do you look like you belong? That's all I want to see. I couldn't care less. I can't lie to you, I couldn't care less. And this is the reason we need to see that from him. To then decide, like, are we going to go all in on his ability? Because if he comes in and he can play well and he looks like he fits and he doesn't look out of place, even if he gets 5 goals, you can bank on that talent. You can say over the next 2-3 seasons, he's going to improve. Then you get in. But if you think he's going to need a season on loan, he's clearly not at the level yet, you don't know if he's going to make the level. Yeah. Like when Eddie came into the team, for example. So if he came to the team and did what Eddie did, then I'm going to be looking at a younger striker maybe at 24, 25 to bridge a gap. But if he comes in and he comes in like, say, okay, not goals-wise, but in terms of his performance, like a Saka or like ESR, even if he doesn't get the numbers right now and you can see the level of performance, there's no way I'm blocking that kid's path because you can see that he'll explode.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think, you know, there's more to it for these young boys than just being able to put up the numbers. If the performances, if the movements, if the traits are good enough and consistent enough, the goals will come, the goals will eventually follow. Because, like, you know, the points made before about how many young strikers are really prolific, you don't have many strikers across Europe under the age of 24 who are prolific and consistent in terms of clapping goals. Like you guys, it's really hard to name them. So yeah, it is more so about what Leroy is saying for me.
Man said Fowler. That's how long far we got to go back to go see Fowler first.
Yeah. And the football was different then, man. Like the Premier League was different. Look, Fowler was a bags man, but you know, like the Premier League was different.
It wasn't even the Premier League, I swear. It was Division One.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
no, so it was the Premiership. It was the Premiership. It was the Premiership. But yeah.
So I'll leave the striker situation there alone because we said a lot of names there that I don't think the club are looking at. You know, one of the ones that I saw, I think is quite unrealistic personally, is Lautaro Martinez. I definitely wouldn't be saying no to that if that was to come to pass, but I think that's very, very unrealistic. And one that looks like... Unrealistic. You don't think it's unrealistic?
Nah, I think he's the type of man, if you pay the money, he'll come. You see all them South American dons? If Barcelona and Real Madrid hadn't told them to chill, if you pay the money, they'll come. They'll come, they don't care. His family, some of his family's barefoot back home, fam. All he cares about is the money. Look at Oscar left Chelsea to go and play in China, all for the money. And he was a decent player.
You don't know, man. Some of them don't like the weather and that, man. They look at London, all they see is clouds and they get
lit. Yeah, look at Di Maria, man. He couldn't wait to get out of Manchester.
Bro, them man used
to... At least he got to Manchester first, though.
But
yeah, let me get this 1 year P, and then he cut to PSG where he got the same amount of money.
Bro, you see that Reyes interview back in the day, rest in peace. Yeah. Them man are used to being in their flip-flops at 9 PM going shopping. Bro, he said like at 8, he said like what, 7 PM, it's dark. He's like, I want to go to clothes at 9 PM in my flip-flops and shorts. He was livid, fam. He hated it here. Them man here, bro.
Nah, I think it was Gary Neville that put that guy in a blender. That's what really sent him off, fam. I think before that he was fine. He was getting used to it, and then
they kicked him off the park.
And after that, it was never the same.
Yeah, I hear that. But yeah, it looks like the club are seriously chasing Tammy Abraham. I don't really want to, you know, discuss that possibility. I'm gonna anti-manifest that by not talking about it. Yeah, so
race it.
So yeah, let's move on to some other links. So today, literally just now as we started recording, I've seen some links where Chris Wheatley has said that if Odegaard is for sale, Madrid want £35 million, around that mark, right? So Mirad Semra has asked this question. If both were readily available, who would be a better fit for Arsenal, James Maddison or Martin Odegaard? Shabs, I'll start with you on this one. So the reports from Sky were saying £60 to £70 million upwards of that for James Maddison, and now they're saying half that for Martin Odegaard. So after seeing us spend 50 M's for Ben White, let's assume that money is no object, yeah, for this summer. So let's actually eliminate the prices. Let's just talk about who's the better fit and who you would want at Arsenal out of these two.
I'm going with Maddison. I think there's just less. I think there's less caveats. There's less risks associated. He knows the league. I don't think adaptation is going to be an issue for him. We see what he's done in the league for Leicester. We see like he's up there in terms of the chances that he's been able to create. We see how him as a player and his all-round ability, what that has done for Leicester. And they're not the same side without him, without that input over the last couple of seasons for me. But yeah, I think he gives us a greater degree of tactical flexibility. I think he can play in the 10, but he can play as an 8. He can play off the left. I think there's a better range of movement. He's not a player for me who is dependent. Like Odegaard, I really, really like Odegaard, but I think that you need to do a lot to accommodate Odegaard, and for me, it's too similar to Ozil. It's too similar to Ozil. Like, this is a highly intelligent player, you know, technically fantastic footballer. You know, he can the things that he can do with the ball at his feet, absolutely amazing. But yeah, I just think we need to, the conditions almost have to be perfect for him in order for him to kind of feel insulated and be able to do his best. I don't think Maddison needs that at all. I think Maddison can go and get the game and take the game to others rather than waiting for the game to come to him. So, yeah, and Maddison is obviously more of a goal threat. So it's not just about being able to create the chances. Like, you know, he can chip in with goals. It's how he creates his chances as well, you know. Set pieces, but he creates from open play. He creates with his movement and his penetration into the box as well. You see, he carries the ball into the final third a lot and into the box. I think he can have an impact and influence the games in a bit of a different way. And it excites me more as a prospect in terms of assuming that he was to start with ESR and Saka. That is a trio of footballers that would excite me in terms of I respect the game intelligence of all of them, and I think there's that, you know, we'd see a lot of fluid movement and dynamism from the three of them. I think they're all you know, very adept, high quality football players. So I like it, man. I like it.
And Rowan, what did you call Vlahovic again? Vlad.
Oh, V-dub.
V-dub, yeah. V-dub and Ofsted, yeah. Okay, so let's hear your thoughts on Maddison and Odegaard.
Yeah, I'm in the Maddison camp as well. More certified. I'm quite worried about Odegaard. I don't know whether everybody else was worried. He gives me a lot of Ozil vibes, and I don't think he's as good as Ozil. I don't think he's worth the risk. 35 million is quite cheap, though. It is quite cheap for what he brings to the team. But at the same time, I don't want another player that can't do away days. I can't do another player that's going to get run over. I can't do another player that wants to go hiding when the game gets rough. Like, I can't do that anymore. Like, Ozil's giving me, what's it called, man? Buyer's remorse. I'm done with them kind of players. So give me James Maddison. That's exactly what it says on the tin. Gets the job done. Less time to acclimatise as well. And yeah, he's more robust.
Yeah, fair enough. Libre?
Do you know what? When I saw that price, 35 mil, yeah, I haven't been as excited over a price as I heard Brian Miles was going for 7 bills. But I think that is an absolute steal. I think that's a steal of a price. The thing about Maddison, yeah, so I've got to think of resource management. So if we've got a finite amount of money and we're going to use it, all of it, and we're going to use it on other people, I feel like Odegaard at 35 mil is much better value than Maddison at 70 mil, which is probably what it will cost, or 70 plus mil. Talking about what we could do this summer and what we could do in the next windows, etc. I also just think Odegaard's a better player. I can't lie to you. I think Maddison's more suited to the Prem, obviously. He's English. He's a bit more tenacious. He's got a bit more about him athletically. But I just think Odegaard's better. I think we didn't really scratch the surface in terms of Odegaard's actual ability and what he can do. And he's a hard worker and he's a fantastic creator. And I feel like he's not as rigid as people think in terms of the 10. I think he could actually play off the right-hand side.
He ain't playing wide enough.
I think he can play wide. I think he can play in a 4-3-3.
He's going to get run over.
I think he's fine. So I would go by Odegaard. I can't lie. 35 mil especially. 35 and 70 mil, I think value for money is a no-brainer.
Because my thing is with the prices, right? It's like I want them to go and sort out every single position this summer. Yeah, I don't really want to go back and do up excuses anymore. I think enough is enough when it comes to squad building with this. You know, we've always got excuses for the manager. You know, he didn't get back, he didn't get this player, we're missing the right back, we're missing the centre mid, we're missing the 10, we don't have his perfect type of striker. So what I would like to see them is get exactly who they want in every position. So I understand the price thing, but I'm also seeing them, you know, spend £50 million early on a centre-back and it being very public as well, where they're spending that amount. So it says to me that, you know, in our priority position, I think we all agree we're centre-mid, 10, right-back, right? Those are our three priority positions. We ain't strengthened any of them. And we've gone out and spent 50 million on a position that, you know, we're probably the most gapped in anywhere in the team, right? So I actually don't want to hear that we didn't have money for a 10 or a centre mid or a striker. Do you know what I mean? Because you've actually bought in a position and like a massive, massive price as well. So I just want the best player that will fit us. And I think a factor for me is the way Arteta tries to play and all this, you know, with his wide triangles and all these combination play and whatnot. I actually think Smith Rowe was better on that right-hand side of the pitch at combining with both Saka and Pepe than what we saw from Odegaard. I know that West Ham game, you know, second half, people are like, yeah, he ran the whole show, this, that, and the other. But I don't think we saw that enough from him. And I get he didn't play enough football in the first 6 months, this, that, and the other. But I preferred what I was seeing from Smith Rowe in those games, who also hadn't played much football for 6 months as well, you know, because he was out injured, etc. So I would prefer someone that came into the 10 to then operate maybe on that left side of the pitch, so like an Aouar, a Madison as well, I think would actually suit what we try and do as a team a bit more, or just stylistically what I see, because I want to keep those relationships on the right-hand side with your Smith Rowes and your Sakas or your Pepes kind of thing. And also, for me, with Odegaard, I just don't think he's going to slap numbers. He might get a few assists, but in that 6 months, he didn't. I think it was one big chance created, and it was in like the second to last game where nothing was really on the line. In the big games where we still had stuff to play for, I don't think he was that dominant personally. So I want someone I think, you know, we can rely on for goals and assists. I think Madison is good for at least 10 goals or and assists combined in the season. I'm not sure if Odegaard will get that for us, because even for Sociedad, I think, you know, he created like the third most chances in the league, but he only ended up with 4 goals, 6 assists kind of thing. So I'm not too sure whether or not his numbers are actually going to help us, because, you know, we are a team that struggled to score goals last year. And so I would vote Madison personally there. But if we did get Odegaard, I wouldn't be sad. But, you know, I definitely would prefer Madison. Was there anything else that you lot think it's worth discussing today? Otherwise, I might leave it there.
You spoke about the right back issue.
So that's a good one, actually. So Cedric has been linked away to Fenerbahce, but I think
he's going nowhere.
Chris Wheatley rubbished those reports within like a few hours. Rubbish them within a few hours. Bellerin has been playing all the preseason games, been linked to a move away. He's not really been linked to anything concrete. Chambers is there, 1 year left on his contract. I don't really know what the plan is with him.
Chambers is going to get an extension.
Do you think?
100%.
Yeah. Because I think all we've heard about right back was that Fabrizio, if I remember correctly, he said if Bellerin goes, Arsenal will definitely get a right back or go for a right back. So what do we do? What do we do in that situation? If Cedric's not going anywhere, Chambers isn't going anywhere, but we're definitely going to buy another right back on top. What do you think that means? Leroy, I'll let you start this time.
I don't think we'll buy another right back at all. Remember I said quite a few pods ago, I said we're going to struggle to sell a lot of these players. Like Bellerin's on like 130 bags or something stupid like that. He's not going nowhere. Who's going to buy Bellerin for the fee we want him for and going to pay him the wages we want him for? Cedric's not going nowhere. We're not going to be able to shift him. The only one we'll be able to shift is Chambers, but in a funny way, he'd actually be relatively useful because he's actually versatile. He's the most useful out of the three. So if we brought another right back, we'd have Chambers, Bellerin, Cedric, Maitland-Niles, and another right back. We can't have five right backs, man. It doesn't make no sense. And Tavares can play right back as well. So
forget that idea, man.
Even though I'm here looking gazy today, but I don't know. But so I just don't see us buying another right back. I don't see it happening because I don't see us getting rid of who we would need to get rid of to make it happen.
Mm. Yeah, I hear that.
I think two of Bellerin, Chambers or Cedric has to go. I don't think Chambers is going. I doubt Cedric is going. Bellerin will go. Maitland's going to go anyway, I think. So we're going to be left with Chambers and Cedric. So I doubt we'll do a right back. But I think if we manage to get rid of Cedric as well, we'll do a right back. Probably like a Max Aarons or something.
Mm. Yeah, because actually, what did I see today? I saw we approached Sergino Dest, because obviously Barcelona have got their financial problems. They're, you know, sort of putting up their credit rating onto Twitter. So it does look like we might be in the market for a right back, but I personally would like to see Cedric and Bellerin moved on. I think Cedric, for someone who we've signed at age 29, he's not done the business at all. You're supposed to come in and be Prem ready. And towards the end of the season, he wasn't even getting into squads. It was a very weird signing that we did there. And I think it's sort of messed up a lot of the right back options that we have. You know, I think the fact that Chambers is starting a lot of these games ahead of you just says that you're not it. So he should 100% be moved on, as far as I'm concerned. Bellerin, enough is enough. I think he came on today in that friendly, and he just looked horrible, you know.
He said enough is enough.
enough is actually enough.
You know what? I've been sitting there shaking my head since you mentioned Cedric the first time, because to me, like, it's just a catastrophe, like the whole thing. Like from signing him, like whatever, long or whatever, it's just a whole, whole kerfuffle, I'm telling you. And this is where we are, you know. We have four options there. I wasn't even thinking about it like that. We legit have four options for right back. None of them are certified starters. The one who is has been identified as the starter is not good enough, has come to the end of his time at Arsenal. I'm talking about Bellerin. He needs to be moved on. He wants to be moved on. And we can't seem to be able to move him on. Like, it's actually a mess. It's actually a farce. It doesn't look like we've got anyone coming up through the pipeline who's ready in terms of starting at right back. And all the targets that are out there at the moment, like, I don't know, like what Leroy says, I just think, yeah, we're not serious about these targets at this point in time, or we can't acquire them right now because we can't shift who we've got currently ahead of them. But it speaks volumes when Chambers was out here at Fulham playing DM last season. Yeah, the season before, sorry. He's here and he's ousted you for starting berth at right back, and he looks the favourite to start. You know, that Brentford game, I'd be surprised if it wasn't Chambers starting that right back. But it tells you about the state of us at this point in time. It's just an absolute mess. So, yeah, man, we need to do something there, but I don't think we will.
So that just brings, you mentioning Chambers just brings it back into that Ben White signing is so strange.
It's
that 50 mil on Ben White is so, so strange. Like, when you've got other priorities that you haven't sorted out yet, to sort that out first is proper weird. Like, it doesn't. I don't know whether my man thinks this is going to be the key to unlocking the type of football he wants to play. But even when we had David Luiz there, it wasn't like we saw a massive like increase in results. And so, like, it's crazy. He's just a crazy man.
Yes, it's definitely a strange decision, man. So, on the right back situation, I think it's a watch this space run. You know, we have a lot of outgoings to do within the next month. I think the window shuts in a month and 3 days. Yeah, so I think that I had 9 players down on my list as ones that we're actively looking to sell, and that I don't think I included Cedric on that. So let's make it 10. I'm not sure that this club has shown that they've got the wherewithal to get that much business done in this short amount of time. But I think we got a lot of players out in January, so maybe they'll do the same. January, it was a lot of cancelled contracts, though, and I'm not sure that that's the best thing to be doing in the summer window, but it remains to be seen. But I'll leave it there. Thanks, everyone, for listening, all the listeners' questions and the comments. If you haven't dropped a like on the video, make sure you drop a like on it now. As I said, this is going to be going out ad-free on the Patreon, and we've got more Patreon content coming out this week. So make sure you're signed up to that. Subscribe to the YouTube channel for all of the Touchy Gooners and the Touchline Fracas content. And make sure you follow us on all of the social medias at Touchy Gooners and at Touchline Fracas as well. So Real One, Shabs, Leroy, thank you very much for coming on. And we'll leave it there, guys. Could have had that fight, but I'm in walk on sight. Man had to grab that mic. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with a good energy. Man gonna work with a bad man vibe. None of these guys can't do that. It's amazing. Like, it's Aaron Ramsey. My shine. That's foul. Man, I'm offside. That's the response of Arsenal. Man crossed the line. Score for my team in the time I play. Where better know when man's inside. Man can't say I get pushed from the floor, but you can ask Ian. Lost their focus in the joy of equalising. But I weren't seeing right.
Sports Social Podcast Network.